TheDigitalLifestyle.com presents The Media Centre Show, Show 114, Thursday, 12th of July, 2007. Centre Show with Orb Networks. I'm Ian Dixon. This week on the show, we take a bit of a detour from Media Centre to look at Windows Mobile devices with Stephen Hughes, a Windows Mobile MVP. And we'll be talking about the new operating system for Windows devices, which is Windows Mobile 6. And we'll be having a look at how to get the most out of the devices. And as ever, I have email and news items. Welcome to the show. It's good to have you along. I really do appreciate you listening. I'm going to start the show this week with an email from Chris. Hi Ian, great show, keep up the great work. I'm curious of your setup. You always state that you're using the Xbox for your Media Centre extender along with your Media Centre system, but my real question is, how is the quality of live TV streaming to the Xbox? I'm beginning the process of outfitting my new house with a whole house system. I have DirecTV and would like to put all four of my STBs, that's a set-top box, in one room along with my Media Centre, Windows Home Server, and other required hardware. Then use the Xbox 360 laptop or small form factor Media Centre in my other four rooms. But I am afraid that the quality of streaming my media will not be accepted by my soon-to-be wife. My goal for the whole house system will allow me to access internet, music, rip DVDs and other related media. Plus, waiting for certain hardware is holding up my installation process. Ricavision remote, HDMI and tuner cards. Thanks, Chris. Thanks for your email, Chris. You're right, I do use the Xbox 360s as Media Centre extenders, and I'll give you a brief overview of my setup. I have one main Media Centre PC, which has got a dual TV card in there, which is a DVB-T, which is over-air digital terrestrial. And then I have, and that machine is at the back of the room, and that is really mainly used as a PC and a Media Centre server. It's very rare that I actually watch TV on that box. Then my main Media Centre usage is through my Xbox 360, which is in the living room, which is connected to an AV receiver for the audio, and a Sony Bravia 50-inch LCD for watching TV on. And that's on a wired Ethernet connection back to the Media Centre PC, and the quality is fantastic. There's no issues with that. With it all being digital, the quality is as good as, you know, on the Media Centre PC as it is on the Xbox 360. And as I've mentioned in the past, the only issues I've had around signal quality has been the aerial issues and the antenna sort of signal quality. And that's sorted now. So that's fine. So that works brilliantly. I then have another Xbox 360 connected over a wireless network, which is an 802.11g network. And that extender is in a bedroom connected to a TV, and that works great too. And occasional network congestion can cause problems, but majority of the time it works fine. And I also have a Roku Soundbridge that I use in a bedroom for audio listening that uses Windows Media Player's network services to be able to consume the media, so I can listen to the audio. And I do have things like my UMPC and my laptop, which I can watch TV on, but not live TV. And then I have a home server backing up the lot. So the issue with quality is no problems at all. Adding the extender, you know, it makes no issues around degrading the quality. It's as good as the signal you've got coming into your PC. So if you're using DVB-T like I am, then you've got a good digital signal. If you're using analog or set-top boxes and analog capture, then it's as good as that. The issue, of course, you've got is your network. So the network could be a weak link. So if you're using a G network, then you can get congestion, and then that can cause you sort of buffer streaming problems. And I think the recommendation is to use a network or a separate released a separate network segment for video. And in fact, we've got a show coming up on the extended technology from Microsoft, and we're going to be talking about that then. So that's the key, really, is the network. The audio is no problem. I've got that running over the network. Things like DVDs, streaming DVDs, you can rip them onto your media sense PC and then use different methods to stream those around, right from file sharing right through to things like Orb, where you can use the service to compress it depending on your network quality. So you can do exactly what you want to do. And I think things like the network make a huge difference. So it'd be interesting to know how you get on with that. And any listeners got any thoughts and suggestions on how to set that up, give us a shout. The email address is ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. Please keep them coming in. I do like getting your email. Now to an update on the guide data problem I reported last week. This is a problem I had where there was no guide data for ITV1. ITV1 is one of the main channels in the UK. And I got no data there, so my scheduled recordings, etc., weren't working. And the only way I found I could get that back was by going through the TV scan procedure and setting my postcode to be another part of the UK. And then it picked up the guide data from another region and the data came back. I've since set this back to the original postcode and my normal postcode, and it's all working again, apart from a couple of sort of the additional less used channels. So it's good to know that that's fixed and working again, and I know that Microsoft are talking to the guide data providers about this, but it shouldn't happen, and it's a real pain when it does. So there is a way of reporting these problems anyway, so I'll try and include a link for that in the show notes. And if you have any guide data issues, let me know, and we should try and keep Microsoft up to date on these. In fact, I'll put a place on the forums on thedigitallifestyle.com for you to report guide data problems, and perhaps we should keep these all together. So check out those links in the show notes. Now a couple of news items from around the web. First on the Xbox 360. Microsoft have extended the warranty on the Xbox 360 to 3 years. And a lot of people have had reports of the dreaded three flashing lights on your 360, which means it's got to be sent back, and I think it could be related to an overheating issue. Well, Microsoft is extending the warranty to include for 3 years to include that, and he's actually reimbursing anyone who's experienced the three flashing red lights error and incurred expenses. So that's good to know, and it's good to see that Microsoft acknowledge that there is a problem and are doing something about it. And in fact, Microsoft are looking to launch a cheaper Xbox 360. I read some reports this week that there may be a cheaper 360 on the way, codenamed Falcon, and it uses a 65 nanometer manufacturing process, making the chips smaller and run cooler and cheaper to make. And that might be a fix for the overheating issues, plus a cheaper device would be great for media center users looking for additional extenders. You can pick up some of these devices, and certainly while we're waiting for the V2 extenders to come out. And one news item that was sent in to me via Mark Carline, and he pointed to an interesting thread on the green button about Sky Media Centre, and the thread reports on an article on MediaGuardian.co.uk and say that Sky are in talks with Microsoft related to a pay TV service for digital terrestrial TV that will be delivered via Media Centre. This is Sky's proposal to offer some pay channels over Freeview via DVB-T and using MPEG-4. And these would be paid for by, I guess, some kind of software service or maybe a smart card or set-top box. And I think for standalone it will be offered as a set-top box. For Media Center, if Sky are in touch with Microsoft, then it could be delivered in a variety of ways. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, but it would be good to know that, you know, that there is the option of having these paid-for channels support built into Media Center, and I just wish that Sky would open up the connection to Media Center so that you can get satellite Sky straight through Media Center rather than having to go through analog capture cards and all that kind of thing, just a straight digital connection. I'm sure that they could work it out if they really wanted to. So we'll see how that goes. And one other thing that was interesting this week was that there could be a surprise beta of Vista Service Pack 1 out next week, according to a post with a link in the show notes. Microsoft could prepare in for the release to manufacture of a service pack for November, and the beta next week. It'll be interesting to see if there's any media center updates included. I would have thought perhaps there isn't in this case because it's been very quiet on the media center update front. I know in the past that the media center team have liked to release their updates in a yearly cycle, and the November timeframe would fit in with that, but I certainly haven't heard anything, and I've not seen anything in beta. It would be a relatively short beta as well, so keep our eyes on that one. Have you ever set up your series records, gone away on holiday, vacation, and returned to find lots of duplicate recorded TV files? Well, Gary Whitaker has a new tool which is a solution for that. It's called Dedupe DVRM. It's a tool that scans your recorded TV folder, looks for duplicate recordings via the metadata, identifies them, and gives you the option of deleting those. And it's quite handy if you have a couple of series records and you do get duplicate data in there. You can run this program and it'll give you the option of cleaning it up, and it's great for when you've been away for any length of time. So check out that. It's a free download on the download section of the digitallifestyle.com. Have a look and let us know how you get on with it. A couple of things I wanted to mention before I go to the interview. First up is the real world feature. I mentioned this last week. This is where I want to interview listeners and ask you a few questions about your media center setups. We'll keep the interviews nice and short, but we can do them over Skype or phone. It should only take 5-10 minutes. And we can arrange them to fit in with your schedule, and I'll put them on a future show. So if you're interested in doing that, just drop me an email, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com, and we'll work something out. I just want to get a feel for Media Center from listeners' point of view, and so get in touch on that. And the other thing I want to mention is I'm still looking to launch a new podcast on thedigitallifestyle.com, and ideally it would be from show listeners. And the show would be around the digital lifestyle topic, but not necessarily Media Center, so it's kind of complementing the show. It could be on gadgets, mobiles, anything like that. So if you're interested in or got some ideas for a podcast, let me know, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. Don't worry too much about the format, etc. We can get in touch and work something out. Just drop me a line if you've got some ideas. Now time for a message from One Voice, and don't forget you can get a free trial of One Voice's Media Center Communicator for Vista from the download section on the site. I'll be back with Stephen Hughes.
Introducing Media Center Communicator, the perfect complement for Windows Media Center. Imagine walking into your home and simply speaking to play music, watch TV, read and send email, call to order pizza, and more. Now with Media Center Communicator, you have full control of your digital home using only your voice. And best of all, there is no voice training required. And built on OneVoice's Media Center Communicator, MC Each Speech Tools is a powerful speech recognition toolkit allowing developers of Media Center compatible applications to easily incorporate speech recognition commands as features. OneVoice offers licenses for MCE Speech Tools along with its Media Center Communicator to the rapidly growing community of Media Center developers. Just say it to play it. To learn more, go to www.onev.com.
Stephen Hughes, welcome back to the Media Center Show.
Oh, thanks for having me, Ian.
It's great to get back onto the show, as you are a real sort of gadget guy when it comes to mobile devices and mobile working, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. And we had a good fun at CES going through some of this stuff. So it's good to get you back onto the show. So first of all, I thought what we'll today talk about the Windows mobile devices and some of the changes that have happened since your last one, which was probably well over a year ago. But before we dive too much into that, just give us a quick background on you and sort of the stuff that you're doing.
Basically, because you know, I love different types of gadgets, any mobile type of technology that's out there, UMPCs, tablet PCs, Windows mobile devices, as well as everything from the Media Center. Right now, I just actually picked up a new the new Sony Vaio DVD changer, so I'm looking at using that in my home system, trying to get everything out to my hard drives for all my movies.
Right, and you're using that to you're using that as a DVD changer. Are you connecting it up to a Sony Media Center machine, or is that to your own Media Center machine?
To my own Media Center machine through the FireWire connector, the cable in the back.
Yeah. Well, so we'll come back to that. So come on, carry on with your introduction then.
Okay, basically what has changed since last time I was on was that actually there's a new operating system out there from Microsoft called Windows Mobile 6. Windows Mobile 6, they basically did, it's more of a nice upgrade for some devices. There's only very few devices out there that are actually going to get the actual upgrade. Most of them are going to actually be coming on new devices. Here in the U.S., we have a few devices that will be getting the update from the T-Mobile Dash, which will be already out there right now for Windows Mobile 6. Some new ones that we'll be getting later this year will be from AT&T Wireless, will be the 8525, the Palm Trio 750, and the Samsung Blackjack. Some of the new things that I like on the Windows Mobile 6 client, when regards to like just about anything you could be doing, if you are an IT person, is that there's a new RDPC client on it, which does a great job. Some of the new features that it has on it allows you to do 16-bit color, which is a big step up, and it also could stream audio sound to your mobile device, which is really cool. If you want to remote into, let's say, your media center and you want to control it from around the house, you can do that right from the touchscreen on your mobile device.
I'm glad you mentioned about the Trio 750, because that's what device I picked up recently, and having gone from 2003 to the Trio is a big step forward. But you're saying that Windows Mobile 6 has got additional features on top of that?
Yeah, there's going to be a new memory manager. It's going to have some nice features too, like what's standard with the desktop. Like there's going to be a Windows update feature. So when small updates do come out to the OS and to some of the programs that are on it, because right now what Microsoft's trying to push is to push their live experience across all their platforms. So there's going to be a new Windows Live Messenger client on the Windows Mobile device, as well as a new Windows Live interface that you can actually access today. They just released a new, MSN Mobile. Right now you can go to the website on any mobile device and you can actually see that they redid the whole UI. They actually have a MSN Messenger that actually is an internet client. You actually can get even nudges through it, which is pretty cool. So your phone will vibrate when someone nudges you if you're online. So you have the persistence of presence everywhere across all the platforms, and you see that with the new spring update for the Xbox 360 that allows now chat messaging as well if you add on a keyboard onto it. So basically, with it, you basically can keep in touch with everyone around. And hopefully, I am hoping that sometimes in the next update Media Center, they'll be able to include that as well, because it wasn't the older version.
Yeah, there's third-party ways of doing it, but they did take it straight out of there.
Yeah.
Before we come back to that, did you see the Windows Live TV stuff that was beta a while ago?
Yeah, I was in the beta of that as well, and that's pretty cool.
You can get the sort of into the messaging side on there, but I did find that while it was nice, it didn't really seamlessly integrate with the rest of the Media Center. It was a kind of separate application.
Yeah, I think, but most people are now moving away from using their PC to do the communication. It's mostly acting almost like a home server, and that's one thing I hope they do later on down the road too, is implement both Media Center and home server into one box, so you could have a headless box sitting in a closet or in another room somewhere where you don't have all the PC noise, and you can use your Xbox as your front end on your PC, on your TV, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's something we talked about on the show in the past, that the Windows Home Server has some very nice features, but it would be the combination of the Media Center and the Home Server together would make a really compelling scenario, and like you said, use Xbox 360s or other Media Center extended clients around the home, and tablet PCs and pocket PCs and UMPCs all sort of connected together, so you've got a true sort of integration of all these devices.
Exactly.
And then going back to the Windows Mobile side then, Windows Mobile 6 was launched, it was a couple of months ago now. When do you think we're going to start to see these devices being upgradable? I know that some of the new devices are coming out with it now, but when we're going to see sort of the Trios and some of the existing devices out there?
The Trio is actually up to the carrier and the OEM manufacturer, so you basically have to check back with them. Like Palm said, they'll probably issue it probably later this year. As well as Singular, which is now the new AT&T here in the U.S., which will be implemented probably, they also said, second half of 2007. For the U.K. and for the rest of the world, there are some new devices that are already actually out there right now. HTC has a new smartphone that has Windows Mobile 6 on it. It's a pretty slick device, has a slide-out keypad.
And we should actually say, you know, there's a difference, isn't there, between smartphone and the old pocket PC-type devices, and sort of things have been slightly renamed. So can you explain to me what's the difference between a smartphone and, say, a device like the Trio?
Sure. Basically, right now, the Windows smartphone, they basically did a whole new naming convention for Windows Mobile 6. So the Windows smartphone is now called Windows Mobile Standard. Basically, it's a phone without a touchscreen. Then they have a Windows Mobile Classic, which is your standard pocket PC that has a touchscreen but no phone capability. Then you have Windows Mobile Professional, which has everything. It has the touchscreen and your phone capabilities. So you do have a phone radio set in it.
Right. So you mentioned there about the classic. Do you think we're going to see traditional pocket PC devices still coming out, or is everything now going to be equipped with a radio and it's going to be a mobile phone device?
You can see right now that the way things are evolving into is that most devices are going to have a telephone radio set in it. It's just going to come down to what people want for the flavor. Do they want a touchscreen, or do they want a smartphone device that's smaller and thinner and can easily fit in the front pocket or in their pant pocket without being noticed? If they want basic email, basic internet browsing, the smartphone is a great way to go. But if you're more of a power user and you do like remote clients and stuff like that, and you're doing a lot of networking, then a pocket PC professional is definitely the way to go. And there are going to be some new devices out there coming from Samsung, as well as Toshiba, and iMate and HTC. They're going to have full, like, VGA, and some of them with 800x600 resolution. That's going to really benefit from that. So you can actually do a really good remote desktop client with those. It will just seem like you're carrying around almost like a UMPC.
Yeah, there's a real kind of blurring, isn't there, between the form factors. I mean, you've got stuff like the OQO that's almost smaller than a pocket PC phone, and then you've got some of the things like the HTC Shift, which is bigger than a UMPC in some cases.
Yeah, the HTC, actually, they went in both directions. They have one that runs on Windows Mobile and another one that runs on Windows Vista. So that's a pretty, they have a nice compromise with the two screens. Depends on what people want to do. And they see that there's a market for each.
Yes, but yeah, like you said, it's what people want to do. I mean, do you think we're going to I know that some of the UMPC devices have got data access, so you can put like a SIM card in them. Do you think we'll see sort of a phone client, a traditional mobile phone client, into the UMPC form factors, so you'll be able to carry a UMPC around that's running Vista, but that's your phone as well, and you wouldn't need to carry a separate smartphone or a Trio or that kind of device with you?
Yeah, that would be nice, but I think most people realize with the UMPC device, it's not really using the microphone on that, unless you're in a speakerphone mode. It's not really easy to put up to your head and use as it. And right now, I have an iMate Jazz Jar, and that thing's a good size device. It's a 3.8 screen, but it's a brick to hold up to your head. Unless you're using a Bluetooth headset, then I can see no problem using that.
Mm. Well, we haven't seen sort of any mobile. We haven't seen sort of a traditional phone client. Are we running on a PC platform? Or that a traditional mainstream client application anyway?
No. I mean, I know the people at OQO were discussing doing that in some of their future versions, the next versions coming out, but they realized basically they want to just center on basically the portable PC market, and with data is actually the connection they want. But I think later on the line you probably will see it, because more and more people are getting Bluetooth. Bluetooth is not dead like people had predicted, what, 3 or 4 years ago. It's pretty prevalent today.
I mean, I'd be quite happy to still have the two devices, to be honest, because, they do serve different needs, and if I'm going out locally, and I don't need to carry a UMPC around me because I've got the Trio, I can get my email and everything else. If I want a bit more, I can take the UMPC with me. So I think probably for me anyway, the separate devices work quite
exactly
well.
And actually HP did a study a long time ago. They actually did a study, this is between with pocket PCs and phones, and people are doing data connection. They're thinking some people want an all-one device, some people want two devices, because for enterprise it's easier to upgrade a separate device rather than upgrade an all-in-one device. And some people do need to have separate devices for different things. Depends on what the functionality is. If it does one thing better, then that works better for them. Another benefit is having two devices that you have two different batteries, so you have more battery life.
Mm. And I think so a lot of the someone like you and I are quite happy using a some kind of soft phone on a UMPC, but I certainly wouldn't want to give it to some of the salespeople on the road all the time who they just want a phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, they want their email on it, but they wouldn't want to run it through a PC.
Exactly.
And probably since the last time we talked, actually, we were probably talking about almost the decline in sales of pocket PCs, and now that's sort of merged and moved on to Windows Mobile devices. What do you think this is going to this Where's this going to go in the future?
Well,
do you think?
I think Windows Mobile will merge, and you'll probably see some even intricacies of UMPCs merging into a small form factor. I mean, the chipsets are getting more and more powerful. Battery life is getting a lot longer, so you can't even move to that direction. We'll just have to wait and see what happens, I think. But I think Windows Mobile, it will continue to grow and grow and grow. I mean, with Windows Mobile 6 I have running, it's a lot more stable. And that's one of the things people find out, because the devices are having more memory on board, and they're able to handle more and more functionality. You think about all the radio sets that are on this thing. and what it can, what these devices are capable of doing. People, what 5 years ago, you wouldn't be able to do this.
Yeah, I mean, the something like the Trio or even the previous sort of iMates that I've had before and everything, the power of those devices is going back to a PC not that long ago, and you can, I mean, I'm carrying a little Trio around me, and I've got sat-nav on there, and I've got my email and a Gmail, and you've got OneNote mobile and Word and Excel, and you've got so much stuff. People do expect a lot from the phones.
Yeah.
And one of the things that people have talked about with Windows Mobile is it's really aimed at sort of the enterprise and the corporate stuff. Do you think that it's still making ground up in the consumer market, where, you know, something like the Symbian stuff is seen more as a consumer?
It is. It is. They're trying to market that, and then they'll probably do that with the next version. Right now, I think Microsoft's focus is on the enterprise because that's where they see most of the money. But if you look now, if you walk around anywhere, you'll see that most people want classy phones that look nice, because it's look, touch, and feel for a lot of devices for people. They really don't care about the phone functionality. Until later on, they say, how do I get my email on this thing? How do I get my pictures off this, my mobile? I mean, the different tasks that they can't do, then they finally realize Windows Mobile has that capability. We see their friend's phone that has it. But most people will walk into a store and they say, I want the Motorola Razr because it looks cool, rather than looking at the functionality of it. So Microsoft's probably going to come out, and one of the manufacturers can come out with more sexier devices out there that are more appealing. Right now, you look at something like the Blackjack. I mean, I think that one's appealed to a lot of people and moved a lot of people over to that platform. But I think UIQ and Symbian, they have some great UIs on their devices, and hopefully Windows Mobile will match up with those. And Apple's going to be coming out with their iPhone, too, so it's another device that people will have to be competing against that will have a very good UI that people will like and will gravitate towards. So Microsoft's trying to make small moves, it looks like. Like with his Windows Mobile 6, they're making a better looking email on the device, so it's easier to read than it previously was. They're also doing easier viewing and editing of office documents. They also want to do a few things too with email management, so you basically have fewer clicks. They have new shortcuts now. So if you actually hold down, like if you have a keyboard device, you hold down the H button, you actually get shortcuts. So you can actually quickly, easily delete, create new messages, and a few other things.
Yeah. So they're improving the usability, because that's been one of the criticisms of Windows Mobile in the past.
Yeah. And they also realize right now what most people do on their mobile devices, they do web search, email, instant messaging, and blogging right from their devices. So they want to make it a lot easier to do. And if you see right now, most devices now are coming out with QWERTY keyboards. I mean, I don't know where iPhone's going with saying that keyboards are kind of dead. I mean, if I don't know if you used some of the software back in the old days where they used to have it in pocket PCs where they were software keyboards, like SCB had one. And that was great because it was the only thing at the time to do before there were hardware devices out there. You could use a touchscreen, but people net better type ratios with actually a tactile feel of a keyboard rather than a touchscreen.
Yeah. I mean, funny as you mentioned that, actually, because I hung on to my iMate PDA 2K for a long while, actually, and that's just got the touchscreen on there, and there's no, you sort of had the slide out keyboard at the bottom. But even that, I never sort of did as much email as I do with the Trio, because I prefer the keyboard and the Trio, and it's better than the iMate, even though it had that kind of touch keyboard on there. So going touchscreen only, I could see, you know, really putting people off with email. But something like the Trio with a little built-in keyboard is so handy for being able to type, and it's just sort of one-handed use, and it really does make a big difference.
Exactly. And the next two things about the messaging client too is, like I was talking about, is the shortcuts. I mean, I spend a lot of time in email, and they actually redone some of the buttons, which is pretty nice. I mean, like the soft keys right off the bat allows you to see that you can actually the delete button is with the first key. It's on the left hand side, which is one of the things I do all the time when I go through my emails. So I'll delete. Sometimes I'll see them, I'll see the titles, I won't even read them. So I'm sorry about some of the people out there that sent me thousands of emails today, but I can't read them all.
I remember seeing your inbox at CES.
Yeah. Yeah, so triaging is a big thing in my life, and I'm sure it's in many people's lives now, as emails become ubiquitously the only way you connect with a lot of people out there, especially in different time zones and stuff like that.
So the usability on Windows Mobile 6 is making it a lot easier for you to clear out the rubbish out of your inbox before you even start
right,
reading.
And I'll just go through a quick list of the shortcuts. Like you hit the A button or the 1 button, it's reply to all. R is reply, mark in red, unread is the K button, F is a flag, which is a nice feature now you can do if you have a Windows 2007, a Microsoft 2007 Exchange server. You can also move email to different boxes, forward with the O button, D delete, L download the message, and S for send receive. So some nice features that are built in right, and most devices now, as I was saying, do ship with the QWERTY keyboard, which makes things a lot easier.
I mean, I found it really. I do like the touch screen, but I can find with a Windows Mobile 5 device, I could get away with not really using the pen, and that's made things a lot quicker as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a sweet spot is to have both. Especially if you're using, like, say, a GPS program, it's kind of nice to have the touch screen capability and other applications as well. But most of the time, people just use the scroll direction bar and the keyboard. They can get around most of the UI. So that's why smartphones are starting to take off a lot more. You see people, if you have the QWERTY keyboard and you have a directional button, it's a great way to get around the UI.
And what about the connectivity back with your desktop or your laptop or whatever, the Windows connectivity? And you know, under XP we've got Active Sync, and sort of it's got changed in Vista. What's the state of connectivity now?
Well, state of connectivity, they actually got away with Active Sync. It's no longer called Active Sync. It's called Windows Mobile Device Center, yes. So basically what that does, it actually provides uses a Sync Center for logging your device connectivity, and creates a connection between your Windows Mobile devices. It only supports Windows Mobile devices 2003 and up. So if you have a 2002 device, you are SOL, unless you install XP on your system first and install Vista as a virtual PC.
And so this, what's the difference between the connectivity options then on if you're using Vista?
You still have some of the same basic connectivity options. You have you don't have Wi-Fi, which is a big thing that a lot of people have been complaining about, but that hasn't been around for Active Sync for a while since they moved off of it with Windows Mobile 5, because they found out it was security risk in order to connect that way. So it might come back in the next version of Windows Mobile, but right now it doesn't look like it because they have to redo the whole connection and make it secure. So that was a big risk for the enterprise. So right now your connectivity options are Bluetooth, USB, and infrared. Well, you can use the toggle between IR or Bluetooth as your COM port connection.
And so does anybody ever use IR for connection? I must admit, it's something I've not used on a device for about 5 years.
What, infrared?
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually noticed the new devices now are not even having IR ports on them anymore. Everyone's using Bluetooth now. And right now, I don't even remember the last time I even synced my device with my computer, because I use an Exchange server, so for all my connectivity, the only time I might sync is if I have download a new program that only installs off the PC. Otherwise, I just download a CAB file, which is the install file for a mobile device I put on my storage card, and I install it from there, and I can always move around. If I wipe my whole device out, I can always reinstall it.
And what about sort of synchronizing files? Do you do, like, you know, copying files from the desktop over onto your mobile device?
Yeah, the thing is, what it uses for, if you are a huge media center person or media files, you can set up new syncs inside of Windows Mobile Device Center. So you basically, you can sync, if you have new pictures on your device, you can actually set up folders where it automatically drops it into. So if you have a certain folder on your media center device, you can just basically sync it to it. You also do the same thing besides your pictures, you also do your music and do it back the same way you did on with other mobile devices inside a media center. You can set up your most recent files, your favorite files, your tagged files that have certain topic in it or a whole folder.
Right.
All depends on how you want to set it up.
Right, so you could set it up so that you're out and about, you take some pictures, you come back, you sync up, and it automatically copies those to the right place on Media Center so you can get at them through Media Center.
Right.
Excellent. And same, what about music? I use my Trio as an MP3 player and listen to podcasts and things like that on it. Is there some good ways of synchronizing the devices for things like that?
Yeah, your music can get synced right across. So you, like I said before, you can categorize it how you want to sync it. You can set the behavior for it like you could before.
So you could use something like Windows Media Player's sort of synchronization features.
Yep, and that's basically how that works is, like, it's through Sync Center as well. So if you were using even a USB drive, that uses the same exact thing. So basically, you can inside of a Windows Media Center, Windows Mobile Device Center, you can actually select how that music gets transferred over and what folders.
Excellent. So you could have a podcast application downloading the podcast into a certain folder, and then you can use a Sync Center then to synchronize that so that you can use those on your mobile device.
And actually covers, if you get the album art, it'll also transfer that over as well, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, and that wasn't available in older versions of Windows Mobile, was it?
No. And also, if you subscribe to some of the other services that are out there, you can also transfer over your music from the subscription service as well. So if you're a subscription to Napster, Yahoo Music, you can also transfer those over. because it follows the same DRM.
Okay, so the DRM actually can go with, so the mobile device center knows about DRM and can sync that up.
Right, if it is a Play for Sure device, if it's Play for Sure compatible with service, then you can do that. So like with Zoom, you can't do that. But some people have gotten away around that.
But is a Windows mobile device classed as a Play for Sure device then?
Yep, you can use it as a Play for Sure device.
So, I mean, with the Relay, are pretty good all-round performers. It's nice to be able to not have to carry a separate MP3 player around with you, because with it, you can stick sort of fairly large SD cards in these machines.
Exactly. Now. Right now, you can get like a 4 gig storage card and be able to store as much music as on a portable music device. And because the price of cards have gone down here in the US, you can buy like a 2 gig, I think, mini SD card for around $20-$30.
Yeah, I saw that Samsung are planning to bring out an 8 gig card fairly soon.
Yeah, the only thing, the problem is that when you do have a mobile device, you have to make sure some of the devices are capable of reading the high density storage cards. Some of them aren't.
So there's two different types of cards, is it?
Yeah, and also it all depends on how the pinouts work on your device and if it has the hardware capable of reading it.
Yeah, so it's just something you've got to check when you get your memory card.
Yep.
And you know, with a standard desktop PC, you know, you're always looking at adding more performance to the devices and putting more RAM in and these kind of things. With a Windows mobile device, is the performance sort of pretty much as it is out the box, or are there things that you could do to sort of get the best out of it?
Well, just like your standard PC, you can tweak a lot of things on a mobile device. Well, a lot of things that people don't realize is that what Windows Mobile does, it actually, when you close an application, you're not really closing it, you're smart minimizing it when you click on the little X in the upper right-hand corner. So what a lot of people do is if you go into your start settings memory, you actually can see all your programs that are running in there, kind of like a task manager. And actually, that doesn't even catch all the programs that are running in the background, because a lot of threads from other programs that are running might be running, you can't see them. So there's a lot of third-party programs out there that allow you to shut that down or actually use and see the programs that are running in your task bar. Like one of my favorites is on Magic Button, because a lot of problems that people have with like the Trio is that they say it slows down, I can't really do anything with it, and they don't realize they have like about four or five different programs running in the background, their email, ActiveSync, their Internet Explorer browser, all running in the background, and they can't shut them down. So what Magic Button allows you to do is if you click on the X button, it'll actually shut it down for you, or you can actually task switch between the different applications and shut it down. So the cool programs are there to help you manage your memory, like SK Tools is another one of my favorites. That allows you to actually see what programs are running or if something hasn't shut down, and also there's temporary internet files on Internet Explorer that a lot of people don't realize. You can actually sometimes move those to a storage card through a registry hack, or you can actually also move your email attachments over your storage card, and that is actually a function inside of your Pocket Outlook.
Right, so you can move where it's storing all the attachments and the temporary.
Right, and Pocket Internet Explorer also, you can also manually delete your temporary internet files. You'll be surprised how many are in there. Usually by going to Menu, Tools, Options, there's actually a tab in there called Memory, and you can actually delete files, and that'll clear out your internet cache. You'll be surprised, you might free up like 2 to 4 meg of information on there easily.
And then that will sort of speed up your device, or certainly free up the memory anyway for you
exactly.
To put stuff on there.
So what a lot of people do, if they're not really savvy, they soft reset their device, and that actually does the same exact thing: clears out your temporary files and shuts down all the programs running. They say, hey, now it works better. But they don't realize what they're doing is actually they're just shutting down the programs, clearing out the memory.
Yeah, because I've had people with that with these devices saying that every now and again that they soft reset them and find that everything sort of works much better when you do that.
Yeah, so that's one of the things I always highly recommend, is just basically where you also install your programs is another thing. So a lot of people install all the programs right into the memory of the device. Now with storage cards, you do have the option to actually install your programs onto your storage card, and that frees up a ton of space on your device. So things will run a lot faster.
Yeah, because I suppose the GPS software that I've got, the TomTom, that's actually on the card, so that because it wouldn't actually fit on the Trio.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can store everything, so you store all your maps on there as well.
Yeah, that's exactly what I do, so that the device is not full of all the TomTom stuff. It's all just on the one card. In fact, it came with the card. It's part of the package, so you didn't have to install anything locally. You just stick the card in and you're good to go.
That's great, and that's what I always highly recommend everyone to do. Any program you install on your mobile device, install on, if you have a storage card, install onto your storage card. Unless it has a huge performance gain, then you might have to install onto your device. It's like a local thing that, like Magic Button, you want to put that on your device. If you have something like SVB's Mobile Shell, great new interface for your mobile, for Pocket PC based devices, I'd definitely install that onto your device, not onto your storage card. But other applications, like if you have a Sling Player Mobile or something like that, you can install that onto your storage card. Or if you have like a, say, Sirius satellite radio player, you can store that on your storage card as well.
Right. So it's so a good way. Is there a big performance hit, though, of sort of the speed of the storage card as compared to the internal memory?
Not anymore. You really don't see it as much. I mean, basically, what you can do, you basically, like the same thing, you can install so that the threads are running in the background. If you run your program once, it will actually keep some of those threads available so you can run back and forth between them. But I don't really notice a performance hit on any applications I run on it.
Mm. And looking at the devices, so you always have a fairly interesting selection of devices. So what are you running at the moment?
Right now, I am running... I have several devices here that are running Windows Mobile 6. I have basically one of the AT&T 8525 running Windows Mobile 6, and that will be out later out this year. I also have a Sprint Motorola Q that I'm using right now as a trial device, and I'm actually pretty satisfied with that for the smartphone client. And also, my wife has the T-Mobile Dash, which she loves right now because she's amazing. She was also doing the same thing with you, carrying around the PDA 2K, and it was just too bulky for her. And now that the Dash is like less than a third the weight of the PDA 2K and does the same functionality.
Yeah. I mean, and do you find then that you sort of vary devices? You know, you obviously don't carry all of these memory at the same time. Do you find you have ones for different situations?
Well, sometimes I do. It depends on if I'm business traveler or not. Like, I still have my iMate Jazz Jar. I use that basically because one of the problems right now with Windows Mobile devices, you can't install multiple Exchange accounts on one device. So if you do have multiple Exchange accounts, like I do, I have five at work for different aliases. And if you're like a consultant, you usually get an Exchange account for your client. So you can't really do, so you basically have a different device for each email if you want to keep in touch with it, what's going on. Or that's one of the nice things too, if you do have I use my Jazz Jar for it. I can use Outlook window access. Mm-hmm. Is that what it is? OWA? I can't remember what it is. Outlook web access. And that allows you to, it was great with a VGA screen because it basically looks like you're having a desktop right there with all your Outlook email accessible. And you can either connect to it. Nice thing I do is if you don't have like a multiple SIM card, you do have multiple devices, I use Bluetooth to connect up between the two. So like I'll have one SIM card and one device and I'll actually use that as a modem. And the other one will, like my Jazz Jar will Bluetooth over to my other device and I have its connectivity there.
Okay, that's quite an interesting way of doing it then. So you've got more than one Windows Mobile device. Some people have, different form factors. You can have the SIM card in one of them and share that data connection out.
And that's another nice thing too. On Windows Mobile 6, they actually did a better job of allowing people to share their internet connection. They actually have an internet sharing application that allows you to use your device as a modem. Because before it was very hard to do, and it's also a carrier thing. So a lot of the carriers don't want you using up their data; they want you to subscribe to using their data if you're going to use your device as a modem.
Because that's one thing that I do like with using the Samsung Q1 is I use my Trio as a modem for that over Bluetooth. So I've got mobile.
Yeah, totally seamless. You can have your device in your pocket and you can be on the surface of the internet.
Yeah, absolutely.
On the Q.
And it's just a better form factor if you've sat down out and you want to do a bit of internet stuff than using the sort of the quarter inch screen on the QVGA screen on the Trio. So you get sort of both options. So in Mobile 6, they've done that better.
So it's a lot easier to do. Before it was kind of a roundabout way in order to do it. And they've used, like a lot of programs just use that. Like they were used at HTC's modem program and they had a lot of problems of shutting down and would always hang. You usually had to do a soft reset in order to get the application to actually close and shut down.
Mm. And when you're using the Windows Mobile devices as a modem, what kind of bandwidth are you getting?
Well, it also depends on the bandwidth of your service subscriber and what data you have. So if you're using a GPRS and Edge, your bandwidth is not as fast as if you're using a 3G device or something with a UMTS or EVDO.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, some new devices look like they might be coming out from here in the U.S. from Sprint and Verizon will be doing that new EVDO-A. Faster speeds. Well, it all depends on, because a lot of devices are throttled back. Like the Trio 750, that doesn't use full UMTS. They actually scaled it back because they're realizing that the battery life on the devices was going down because you're using data connecting. You really don't need to connect for high speed data all the time. So what they did, they scrolled it back, so they shut back the data speed connection, so you don't use up your battery life. And that's a big thing about things. If you have high speed data, you're also going to use up more battery life in order to do that, because it takes more processing power in order to process that data coming across.
So if you're using your Trio, you're not going to get the full speed as if you use say a data card on a PC card or a USB device.
Right, but unless you do like a registry hack where you're on a third-party program that actually allows you to use the full UMTS or HSDPA,
you get hit with the full data rates on your cell contract.
Yeah, well, you don't get with the full data. Well, yeah, in the UK you do, but here in the US, most people have unlimited plans, so that's not really too much of a problem.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? That I was talking to someone from Vodafone and the other day, and you know that they offer some kind of unlimited data, but they want to sell you that in a USB modem or a PC card modem, and not for something like the Trio where you've got a separate data rate. And there's a new tariff coming out, I think, where you can get as much as you want email, but web surfing is charged differently, and all these kind of things. And there's not that kind of all-you-can-eat data plan that I think a lot of people...
Yeah, exactly. Because actually, what most of the carriers do, they use a thing called ARPU, which is average revenue per user. And they see that they can bill you for those different items a la carte, they can make a lot more money that way than if they gave it to you all unlimited.
Yeah, and it's just a shame because I think that holds back. I mean, I would certainly use it more if there was a plan that was budgetable. You know, that you knew what your costs were up front, and that, you know, okay, it's going to cost you more than a standard sort of contract, but you know what you're going to be paying at the end of the month.
Exactly, and that's why there's certain programs like for the mobile devices that are out there, allows you to monitor your data connections. Like SVB has one, that they have a program called SVB GPRS Monitor, which actually monitors all your data traffic, so you're not going to be surprised by the end of the month and hit with a big bill.
Yeah, because I think that's something that puts a lot of people off.
Yeah, and around the world, the usage scenarios vary because it also depends on the carriers themselves. Like, huge in Europe is SMS text messaging because it's cheap to do that. Here in the U.S., usually you can buy unlimited plans, but most of them are, you usually get charged 10 cents per message.
Because SMS is huge in Europe, and that's the way that most people actually, be using a mobile device.
Yeah, because it's cheaper to SMS than to send an email.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and it's just it's just everybody uses text messaging, certainly here in the UK. That not everybody's using email and mobile devices, but everybody uses text messaging.
Now, is there an application that allows you to text message directly from Media Center?
Good question, actually. I don't believe there is off the top of my head. Someone may be able to listen to the show and correct me, but I don't believe that there is at the moment. You can send text messages through to non-mobile devices, but you're using a BT service, but I'm not sure there's the kind of on-screen entry and then send it. I suppose it's just someone just needs to come up with that service. I guess that there's a service out there already for the PC client, but there's probably not a 10-foot version.
Right. I suppose OneVoice hasn't done that yet, because they've done a great Skype client, but I'd love to see them. Maybe they do that too, the SMS and instant messaging.
Yes, actually, I'm pretty sure that may well be something to do. I'll have to check up on that, because I know they've got the voice calling on there, but I think it's only for US, so I haven't tried that myself. I've done the Skype stuff, but that would be good. But that's kind of not exactly the way you want it to do, is it? Because OneVoice will give you the ability to speak the text message, but if you just wanted to type it in,
exactly,
you need a 10-foot interface for that. But I'm sure it's one of those things that, as these devices and as these services get more integrated, that you could be on a Windows mobile device, you could be on a Windows PC, Windows Media Center, and still be able to send email, SMS, and all the different services from perhaps one user interface.
Yeah, I think instant messenger is the big thing that's going to make a change a lot of people's way they use things right now. I mean, because I noticed like kids are using a lot more text messaging because it's easier for them to communicate that way. And with instant messaging, you're always on. You guys can see what people are doing at all times. I mean, I use it all the time when we geek out with like a bunch of people. Like when we go to MVP Summit, that's how everyone keeps in touch on their mobile devices. That they'll put their location in Windows Instant Messenger and keep it updated and communicate that way rather than by phone.
I like the, it's sort of less, for me personally, I prefer it because it's less intrusive. You know, if someone can send you a message on Instant Messenger, it's a lot less intrusive than getting a call. Because you know, I'm one of these people. If someone rings me up, I kind of have. Throws my train of thought off completely while you take this call, but instant messages, you can sort of work around that much better.
Exactly, you can also be on a phone call with someone else and still do an instant messaging at the same time and not be as disruptive.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny actually when you see, I guess it's a phenomenon across the world now that teenagers are using like instant messages all the time now, you know, and people ring each other up by voice much less, you know, the sort of teenage crowd are using voice much less.
Oh yeah, definitely. And voice is still the way to go, and right now, the next big thing what people are hoping is going to be is video conferencing. As we see, like, the video has taken off on the internet now, there's more bandwidth, and right now you look at YouTube, I mean, that's like one of the new mediums, and you've probably seen that move over also to a media center as well, and mobile devices as data plans become faster. And you guys can stream video a lot better.
Mm. I mean, the power of these devices and the sort of the service behind the scenes is enabling a lot of sort of convergence and different scenarios that even sort of a year and a bit ago when we last talked on the show that weren't sort of possible then.
Oh, exactly. I mean, technology is just taking off right now. I mean, you can see a lot more things moving towards VoIP as well on mobile devices. Like I know in Europe, they're moving, like T-Mobile's moving to actually allow you to switch between the devices, and here in the U.S. they're going to move that way as well. So you actually can switch between your regular phone device and a Wi-Fi connection for doing VoIP.
Yeah, well, that would be good. I mean, the Skype client on the Trio works really well. I'm just always mindful of the data costs that you're incurring, and
right.
More than just if you rang someone over the regular phone.
But if you can jump on a Wi-Fi connection, that's the only the thing about the Trio. You have to add a Wi-Fi card to it. It's not built in.
That's something I must admit I haven't missed moving from the iMate to the Trio. I very rarely use the Wi-Fi on the iMate. I tend to use just the data connection all the time on that now.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people realize. Is they really don't need high-speed data for basically what you do for everyday functions. That's what I noticed, too. It's like most of my functions are going to be either email, maybe an instant messaging. I'll keep it on all the time. And that's the great thing about the data is it doesn't suck up your battery life as much either as Wi-Fi would. And you really don't need the high-speed data. So what a lot of people even do, too, like with 3G connections, one of the benefits of having 3G is it allows you to do data and voice at the same time, so you can receive your email at the same time or search the Internet while you're talking to someone on the phone on your mobile device. But if you go back to a 2.5G or a 2G, you can actually scale back your data. There's a lot of registry hacks, and some third-party programs allow you to actually switch between your data connections depending on what you want to do. So if you want a high-speed data connection, you can turn on high-speed data for, like, say, and it'll automatically turn off in 5 minutes and scale you back to the slower connection.
Right, so all things like that improve the battery life.
Oh, exactly.
I mean, the modern devices now, these Windows Mobile 5 and 6 devices, what's the kind of the battery life that you're expecting to get out of say, something like a Trio?
It all comes back to how you use device and how much you use your device. Basically, if you use it mostly for voice calls, you're probably not going to use up too much of your battery life if you use it for data constantly. If you're going to be streaming like a Orb video or you get something like a Slingbox video all day long, you're not going to get as much battery life as if someone was just using it as their phone.
I think things like the active sync settings, sort of the frequency of email, where you've got it set for you know, as mail arrives, or you can set it for 30 minutes or an hour or whatever. I've noticed that can vastly improve your battery if you just scale that back a bit.
Yeah, if you control the heartbeat from your exchange server, that's one of the ways you can do that.
Mm. I mean, but overall, I mean, I must admit, I've been really pleased with the Trio, and it's probably one of the nicest phones I've had, and just the fact that it's my MP3 player, sat nav, and everything, it's made life a little bit easier.
Oh yeah, I mean, that's the nice thing. I just carry my phone around for everything. So I'm a big fan of satellite radio. So I actually subscribe to both XM and Sirius, and I can listen to that wherever I am. And I can usually get a data connection before I get a satellite signal inside some of the buildings that I work at. So it's nice to have that playing in the background.
Yeah, and the way that these tie, you can tie them up with Bluetooth as modems as well for things like USB and PCs and tablet PCs. It's great to have that fallback, isn't it? You can't get a connection, you know. say you're out in the field and you need a data connection, then you've got that device there in case you need it.
Oh yeah, also traveling from hotels, people expect it now that hotels have internet access. Sometimes they don't, or you don't want to pay the $10 to $15 daily charge for it. All you do is plug in your phone and you're connected.
Yeah, I mean that's one of the things I found at CES. It was actually cheaper to do the data connection on my phone than it was to use the hotel rate.
That's kind of sad, isn't it?
Yeah, it is really, especially considering that, you know, I've got my phone from the UK over in the USA, and it's still cheaper.
Problem at CES is that so many people are on cell phones, they saturated the cell phone towers, and you couldn't even get phone calls during certain times, like around dinner time. Most people said you couldn't get in touch with them because their phone was out of service.
Yeah, because everybody's trying to call home.
Yeah.
It's not that often, though, I guess you get that many tech people in the same vicinity, and I suppose, you know, if they're anything like you, they've all got three or four devices with them.
No, well, if you notice too, like if you've attended CES several times, like if you notice over the years, the devices have changed. What people carry around before, it used to be like cell phones, and then it moved to Blackberries. Now I see more and more Windows mobile devices everywhere.
Yeah, definitely, I noticed that this time, and also I noticed that compared to in Europe, there's more people seem to have Windows mobile devices in the US as a consumer phone than do in Europe at the moment.
Oh really?
You see a lot more Nokia devices.
Symbian, but Nokia has some very nice devices as well. They have a nice tablet that they have that just came out, and they're moving pretty well with all the devices. We have a nice organic display, so it's easy to read out side, which Windows Mobile hasn't done yet. And also Nokia has better, in my opinion, better cameras in their devices.
Yeah, I think the N95, I was having a look at that the other day, and that's got a very nice camera on the back of it.
Yeah, something to do full VGA video, which is amazing. And hopefully Microsoft will see that, and that's what a lot of people want in the consumer field. They actually want the device to be a camera. But I was amazed at the dash, how great the picture comes out on that thing. I mean, that looks like a regular digital camera, like a 2-megapixel.
Yeah, I mean, that's something else we've not really talked about, isn't it? That these things make great cameras now, and it's another device that you don't have to carry around with you if you've got a good camera on your phone.
Right. I mean, that's one thing like Sony Ericsson has always done a great job with, is that they have very good cameras in their devices, and as well as the Nokias. And Nokia's also putting in hard drives in a lot of their phones as well, which we will probably see. Like, that never came to fruition was that Samsung had one. It had a smartphone that had a 8-gigabyte hard drive in it, and that never came out. But maybe we'll see that in the future with some other devices.
I seem to remember that maybe even the subject we touched on a previous interview, is that Windows Mobile, you know, how come no one's got Windows Mobile device with a hard drive, and then you've got a really powerful device? Is it because that the sort of the SD and all this kind of RAM is so much more convenient now?
Oh, it is. And the other benefit too is that with a hard drive, you also lose battery life, because you got to spin up that hard drive every time you want to access it. So that's one of the other downsides. And right now with high-speed data access and the storage, you really don't need to. I mean, I can store all my music on my home PC, and I can stream it from Orb for my data connection, and I don't have to store anything locally on my device. Or if I want to watch TV, I can stream from my media center PC across using Slingbox, and I can control it directly through my mobile device.
Yeah, I mean that's one other thing we've not as a benefit of these mobile devices. I use WebGuide, and you've got the great mobile browser interface on there. So if there's a program that you forgot to record, or you hear about you want to record, I can just pick that straight up through my through the Pocket Internet Explorer, and you're there. You can set what you want to record.
Exactly.
And these devices are moving forward really well, and it's really nice to catch up and to see how well they're progressing. And it's nice to see how really the devices are just becoming. Not just for the sort of the hardcore geeks, and the sort of the consumers and the enterprises are picking up on them as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Another thing, I like to do, even with if you have some of the old devices that you have, like your PDA 2K line running your house, you can use that to interface with your home system inside your house because it has Wi-Fi on it. You can actually connect to the internet streaming. Like I actually have one in my bathroom. I use an old HP 4350 that I use to connect up to my Sirius radio over Wi-Fi, and also connect up to my media center PC and stream audio from that as well.
Yeah, that's a good idea actually, because I think mine's in a drawer with the battery going flat at the moment, so I could just use that.
Exactly. So what I do, I just put it in the cradle, leave it in the bathroom, hook up some. I have some in-ceiling speakers I've hooked up to, and it sounds great.
Yeah, it's a really good use of the device then, rather than just sitting in a drawer like mine is.
Yeah, because one of the devices I actually fell in love with at CES, I actually got to try for 30 days, was out of the Sonos system. don't know if you're familiar with that. Basically, that's a basically it uses its own proprietary Linux-based operating system running on a small little handheld, and it has a UI back to your music collection on your PC, or you can stream music directly from Rhapsody.
Yeah, so you can reuse some of your old technology to make something quite similar, really.
Yeah, so you can do the same thing. You can use a remote desktop client and actually control your music player if you want to do that, or you can stream it right now through Windows Media Connect.
Yeah, and I guess you could run sort of the Orb interface on your device as well.
Yep, yeah, exactly.
That's a nice way of using it. I'm not sure that it'll work for my old Compact Aero that I've got in the drawer.
Yeah, well, what I'm waiting for, too, is like a slideshow to come out, too. So you're going to be having some gadgets actually take control of your Media Center player. You actually see the album art playing on your device. I mean, like you do with Orb right now, but you can actually use it inside your home, anywhere in the home. And hopefully those sideshows will be able to play on your mobile devices. And a few of them will be coming out in the future that will do that. We saw some of the remotes at CES too, which I can't wait for.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things I blogged about was the Recovision fridge magnet, which I think is a really nice idea. It's sort of the wireless device. It's a sideshow, and you just stick it on your fridge, and you can do hand notes, and you can control Media Center, Media Player all through that device.
Yeah, that's a very sweet thing.
Yeah, I mean, that makes it fairly inexpensive sort of wall control systems that previously would have been quite an expensive and sort of difficult job of setting these up. And you mentioned about, before we wrap up, you just mentioned about the DVD changer that you're doing. So just go into a bit more details on what you're doing with that.
Well, basically, what I know I want to do, and I know a lot of people want to do, is basically have all your DVDs ripped onto a hard drive. And there's a few utilities out there that allow you to do that right now, but the problem is that I have, a lot of people have, is that you can't play it on your Xbox 360 if you do rip it as a straight VOB file. So, but a lot of people are doing the ripping it into the MSDMS format, so it allows you to actually, you can actually fast forward through your video files and play it on the Xbox 360. And also the utility allows you to rename all the metadata as well.
So what's the utility using to do that?
Oh, I can't even think of it off the top of my head. I think it's like MCE Utilities. Is that one of them?
Or is it MSDVR Toolbox?
It's not that one. I should send you the link on that as well, which one it is.
Send me the link. I'll include a link for that in the show notes.
Yeah, because it actually has its own API as well, and you can customize it. And I'm going to, hopefully if I have some free time, I'm going to try to work on that as well.
That's good. So if you've got them as the DVR files, that's a better way of using them than just through the WMV or the TS.
Right, and you can batch rip all your DVDs or your audio files, which is a nice thing to do. That's one of the reasons I bought it too, because I have so many CDs. I mean, I think I have like 4,000 CDs, and I only have like 2,000 of them ripped, so I was doing it manually. And that's one reason I got, so I can load up all my CDs into it 200 at a time and have them just rip when I'm at work.
Right. And you mentioned it's a Sony unit, but and you FireWire connecting that to your non-Sony MediaSense PC, so you don't have to have a Sony.
No, you don't. And they're starting to get hard to find. I mean, they're readily available on Amazon like a few years ago for about $199 on sale after a $100 rebate. And actually, I picked this one up off eBay, one of my favorite places to pick up audio video equipment.
Yeah, absolutely. The Samsung came from there as well, so it's good. It's a good place to pick up some stuff. I found it's. In fact, my Windows Home server was built that way as well. I got some bits off eBay and built it up that way. Many thanks for your time today. It's great talking mobile.
Oh, it's great coming on.
And I know you've got so much stuff going on with your different websites, so I'll include a link for those in the show notes. Is there anyone particularly you want to mention now?
I just started doing techchronicle.com. I'm going to start doing some video and audio reviews on there as well, some text reviews, and also over at bostonpocketpc.com.
Excellent. I mean, I really like the stuff that you're doing on there, and we had some good fun at CES talking about all these gadgets. I know you like your mobile devices.
Oh, yes, I do. Okay, thanks for having me on, Ian. I really appreciate it.
All right, well, thanks for your time, and I'll speak to you soon.
Thanks to Stephen. Please keep the email coming in, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. I do like getting it. If you've got any news items you think I should talk about, if you've got any tips, any questions, send them in, and I love reading them out. Don't forget the forums on thedigitallifestyle.com and the downloads. And if you've got any ideas on podcasting or on the real world feature, I'll see you on the website and speak to you again next week. Bye.